Support for this day in esoteric political history comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it, Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/thisday. That's odoo.com/thisday. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, September 7th, 1901, at the Pan American Exhibition in Buffalo, New York, President William McKinley is shaking hands with people in the crowd when a 28-year-old man named Leon Czolgosz fires two shots into his chest. McKinley rose slightly on his toes before collapsing forward, saying, "Be careful how you tell my wife." He collapsed and was rushed to a hospital. It would be over a week before McKinley would finally succumb to his injuries. In the hospital, it looked like he would recover, and then he worsened, and eventually he did die, the third U.S. president to be assassinated. There's Lincoln and Garfield and McKinley. Nikki Kelly, of the four presidents assassinated in U.S. history, is McKinley the most overlooked? What do we think?
I might give that to Garfield, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know. Tie for Garfield and McKinley. I don't think people dwell a lot on either
Garfield, because people forget he was president. Right. Like, right. I don't think he even pops up in people's minds, but McKinley's definitely a close second.
All right. Well, those voices are, of course, Nicole Hemmer of Columbia and Kelly Carter Jackson of Wellesley, and we are here to talk about the McKinley assassination. Hello there.
Hello, Jody.
Hey there.
So yeah, okay, so Kelly, you make a good point. At least people knew McKinley was a president. But maybe they don't know much beyond that. So what kind of president was McKinley? And then we'll talk about why Leon Czolgosz assassinated him.
I mean, I think part of the reason why people aren't quite aware is because McKinley's sort of a middle of the road president. He doesn't do anything quite remarkable or super scandalous or controversial in the way that would sort of stamp him in our historical minds. But, you know, he's not a horrible president. I mean, when we think about sort of the lineage of American presidents, but he's a Republican. He's from Ohio. He precedes Grover Cleveland as president. He's the last American president to have served in the Civil War, which I think is interesting. And he really, you know, leads the Spanish-American War, is responsible for the annexation of Hawaii and also the Philippines and Guam and Cuba and Puerto Rico. So he's a part of this era of imperialism that pretty much takes on a whole new level when his predecessor, Teddy Roosevelt, comes into office.
Right. I wonder if he was somewhat overshadowed by Roosevelt, because McKinley does do all of these things. He's innovative when it comes to campaigning. He sort of inaugurates the modern campaign. Mm-hmm. He, as you said, was president when the U.S. won the Spanish-American War. But Teddy Roosevelt was leading the Rough Riders in Cuba. And Teddy Roosevelt was using the bully pulpit in all of these new and innovative ways. And so he was just such a larger than life figure that even someone like McKinley, who was pretty popular as president, gets overshadowed because of who came after.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, and certainly Roosevelt is part of this story, you know, his reaction to this assassination and his rise to power. Roosevelt himself, less than 10 years later, or about 10 years later, there's an assassination attempt. We've done that episode. And, you know, I think we can talk about this. This is an era, it feels like an era of assassination and political violence and so forth. But let's go to Buffalo. Everyone, that's always a phrase I like to utter. Let's go to Buffalo and talk about the Pan American Exhibition. Well, first off, I mean, right, this is the era of these big exhibitions, you know, where showcasing different cultures and showcasing new technologies. And McKinley is really like, I mean, he's the president of the United States, but it does feel like this is a big moment for him. He's speaking to crowds that seem to really adore him. And so it really is this, like, you know, it is quite a moment at this World's Fair type event.
Yeah. These expos are huge, especially at the turn of the century. I mean, you have over 100,000 people gathering, filing in to, you know, meet VIPs, and especially President McKinley. And he wants to meet with the people. You know, he wants to shake hands and kiss babies, and that's sort of like his MO. He is highly beloved at this point. So it makes sense for him to do something like this.
Yeah, he'd just been reelected, and so his popularity was pretty high. And, you know, when I mentioned earlier that he'd started this new form of campaigning, he was actively campaigning, and he was going out, and he was meeting people. And people really liked him for that, and they were eager to meet with him and mingle with him. He had this real man of the people feel about him, and the level of excitement around him is fascinating, because I don't think that I knew he was quite so personally popular as he appears in this moment.
Yeah.
Affable.
One of his biographers, Margaret Leach, who wrote a biography of McKinley, talks about his, quote, firm, unquestioning faith, his kindly frock-coated dignity, his accessibility and dedication to the people, the federal simplicity that would not be seen again in Washington. So that gives you a sense of who he was. By the way, frock-coated dignity is a great turn of phrase.
Yep.
Where you can combine someone's clothing with a sense of who they are. You know, I think for me it would be like, you know, sweatpants wearing affability or whatever. But yes.
That's all of us dignity. Right now.
Right, exactly. The other interesting tidbit about this World's Fair, he does this massive speech. There is a pyrotechnics display in which it's the fireworks say, "Welcome, President McKinley, Chief of our nation and our empire."
It's a lot of a lot of words for fireworks to spell out.
I didn't even know you could do that in 1901.
I didn't know you could do that today.
You're showcasing new technology. Look how many words we can put into our fireworks display. Welcome, President. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10 words. A 10-word phrase. Welcome, President McKinley, Chief of our nation and our empire.
Yes, let's not sleep on that last word.
I know. Exactly. That's probably the most important part.
Yeah. So he attends this. That's sort of the night before. He attends the next day. It's actually September 6th, we should say. But he attends this public meet and greet. He's shaking hands. And here comes Leon Czolgosz. Nikki, he is usually referred to as the anarchist Leon Czolgosz. Tell us a little bit about his political leanings and motivations here.
Yeah, so he's a Polish immigrant to the United States. He grows up in Detroit. He was a child worker, like so many people and so many migrants to the United States. He worked in a steel mill when he was just a kid. And he lost his job in the midst of one of these many panics that were happening in the late 19th century. The economy was really powerful, but it was also really unstable. So people would have boom times, and then they would have these deep depressions where lots and lots of people would lose their jobs. They would have no unemployment compensation. They would basically have their lives on the line. And it's in this moment that he turns to anarchism and sees it as a solution for the problems that he's having in his life. And anarchism at the time was closely associated with the assassination of political leaders. It was one of the tools in the anarchist tool belt when it came to political revolution and political change. And so he saw himself, he saw this as a very political act. He wanted to affect the government of the United States.
Mm-hmm. And this is also a time, we should say, where you could actually get close to presidents, way closer than you could now. There was not a formalized Secret Service in the way that we understand it today. And so the ability to be able to gain close proximity to a U.S. president was not out of bounds.
Yeah, though there's an interesting element there, which is that, yes, I mean, we've talked about this when we've talked about assassinations of this era, the Roosevelt assassination, for instance, that you can get this level of proximity. But I am also struck that on almost every story of a political assassination attempt or assassination, there is also a trail of warnings and fears. Mm-hmm. And that was the case here, too. There, the secretary to the president, George B. Cordelieu, actually took this event off the books a couple times, saying, "We fear that there's going to be an assassination attempt." But yes, I mean, I think the to take half a step back, the larger story of political violence in this country is that we've gotten better over the years at snuffing out these attempts and preventing them and heightened security and so forth. But I think throughout, there's always been warning signs, mm-hmm. and it's kind of striking in this case too. And McKinley, I think by all accounts, actually sort of ignored the advice, right, Nikki, and, mm-hmm. and said, no, I'm going to put this event back on the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, Cordelieu had good reason to fear. Not only was there this surge in violence toward political leaders, but two presidents had recently been assassinated while in office. And so he takes this off the books because it's so many people. And there is security there, but they don't have the same kind of training. McKinley isn't paying a ton of attention to them. And they're racial profiling. They're looking for people who look like Italian immigrants or who look like German immigrants because those are the populations they believe represent the anarchists. And so they actually stop a few different people who look like they're of those ethnicities. But when it comes to Czolgosz, he looks very Midwestern. And so they're just like, oh, yeah, you're fine. Go right on through.
And in the wake of this, I think, as is often the case, right, this galvanizes and accelerates efforts to consolidate some of this intelligence gathering. And so, you know, within a few years, you have what eventually becomes the FBI. And I think we talked about that Black Tom incident, mm-hmm. which was, about 10 years later or so. But this is an era where, because of political violence, you start to see the intelligence state really start to come together.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because he fires two shots, almost a third. He tries to shoot him a third time. And, you know, the crowd around him sort of attacks him and pulls him away. But the fact that he could, again, get so close and shoot off his gun multiple times, it's just wild. And the fact that, you know, President McKinley is still sort of, he's aware. He doesn't die instantly. He has sort of final words, and then until he finally loses his life, it's touch and go for a while.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to be okay. I mean, getting shot in the chest twice is not great for your health, but it's not until maybe a week or so later mm-hmm. when gangrene sets in. And there's been a lot of speculation as to, you know, was he not cared for properly? Mm. You know, was this a preventable death? Because it does take so long for him to die, but it's ultimately that secondary infection that kills him.
Meanwhile, his vice president, Theodore Roosevelt, is making his way up. He was fishing, I think, at the time mm-hmm. when he got word. And now he is thrust into the presidency and he makes his way up to Buffalo. Actually, I think, is there for a couple days and then leaves because he thinks McKinley's going to recover, and then is back in D.C. when he gets word and is very quickly on.
But he leaves and goes on vacation.
He goes to climb a mountain. Right.
That's like, yeah. I'm like, the president's been shot and your right. impulse is, you know what, let's go mountain climbing.
But it's the most Teddy Roosevelt thing.
That's so Teddy. Yeah.
But then on September 14th, when McKinley dies, Roosevelt is immediately sworn in mm-hmm. as president and thus begins, you know, a very consequential presidency mm-hmm. with Teddy Roosevelt. So as we wrap up here, Czolgosz is killed, executed, electric chair, October 29th of the same year, a month
Pretty
and a
fast.
Half later. Mm. Yes.
Mm. Not quite the same level of appeals and whatnot that exists today.
Yeah, the electrocution chair, it's really no joke at any point in history, but in 1901, it's not a way that you want to die. It's speculated that actually his electrocution was allegedly filmed by Thomas Edison, which I think is interesting. But he gets electrocuted. He has his final last words, and he owns it. He says, "I killed the president because he was an enemy of the good people, the working people." So he's unapologetic in his stance and takes that literally to his death.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's leave it there. And as we wrap up, I guess maybe let's return to the words of Margaret Leach, McKinley's biographer, because I think there is this really interesting picture here of Roosevelt takes over. And as Leach puts it, you know, we have this steady, faithful, simple president in McKinley who was assassinated, and now we have the primacy, as she puts it, of the young men crowding forward. The nation felt another leadership, nervous, aggressive, strong, and under command of a bold young captain. This is Teddy Roosevelt here. America set sail on the stormy voyage of the 20th century. So really, I think an inflection point and a sort of ushering in of a different kind of politics here in with this assassination. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's leave it there. Nicole Hammer, thanks to you as always.
Thanks, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
This Day in Esoteric Political History is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, listener-supported, artist-owned podcasts. Our researcher and producer is Jacob Feldman. Our producer is Brittany Brown. Kala Nakua helps with transcripts. Julie Shapiro is executive producer for Radiotopia. Get in touch with us if you have any questions or comments or ideas for the show. You can email us thisdaypod@gmail.com, or you can find a form at thisdaypod.com, where you can also get our full archives, transcripts, and learn lots more about the show. Follow us on social at thisdaypod on Instagram and Twitter, where we are posting stuff each and every day. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Radiotopia.